Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Scream Queen, a podcast about scary movies.
From people not typically depicted in scary movies, yes.
How you doing, Swami? How you living?
I'm, you know, what is a day? I don't even, we're living in fucking Groundhog's Day right now. That's what it feels like.
I don't know what's happening no more.
But I did start watching Umbrella Academy season two. I mean, here's the thing that made me love season one. Mary J. Blige playing this assassin, kicking everybody's ass, lighting pink flamingo candles and blowing shit up. Right. And like, she is notably absent from season two. So it just feels like, you know, margarita mix that doesn't have the tequila in it. It's just like, why is this here? I don't get it.
I finished season two. And yeah, I didn't remember season one that well, but I was, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh wait, she got taken out season one or whatever. I'm like, fuck. So there was a lot to be enjoyed about season two. Like I like the little kid character who's like a grown man. I really do like his character a lot. But it wasn't enough. Like she was clearly missing. Like they fucked up with that. They should have brought her back some kind of way.
Yeah. Like, I did kind of like the little Ellen Page and her fucking that mom, you know, Ellen Page fucking that mom. I was like, okay, I don't hate this, but fucking a mom.
She's a mom fucker.
She's a mom fucker. But and then there was that homegirl who got her powers back finally, the one who's like who could rumor people.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool.
She never lost them. She just never used them.
Well, because but like in the end of season one, she had lost them because Ellen Page had slit her throat.
But I thought she said she was just afraid to use them because of what they resulted in.
Well, that's what it ended up being. Because like she realized that like having lied to Ellen Page the whole time is what caused her to like get her throat slit or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the very onset of her injury, she just didn't have a voice, so she couldn't use her power. But then as she healed, it got better. It was like, it reminded me of Purple Man and Jessica Jones, where it was like, how can you trust anybody actually feels anything genuine for you if you have control over their emotions, you know? Mm-hmm. What are you watching? What are you doing? What's going on?
Last night, I woke up, I have this thing where I wake up at like 3:34 in the morning, and then I don't fall asleep until like 5:30. But I finally just sat there and watched the OG My Bloody Valentine, and that shit was funny. It was really good. It was funny, and like, I mean, there's no black people in it. Like, it's very, very white. But the 80s, like a group of kids finding their way out of a mine shaft as there's this like man on the loose, you know, this old miner. I never bought that. I didn't think that was a good monster, so that's why I never, I wasn't intrigued by it. But to watch it, it was really creepy. It was actually had elements of like Black Christmas in it. And like, I don't know. The music was good. The violence was dope. Like really hella violent and really horny. It's super duper horny, the film.
Oh, okay. Well, violent and horny.
There's a couple of cuties in it. There's like a couple of six footers in it at least.
You know how to get me. I know somebody who's actually in the remake. He was just like a background character who got killed. Sent me his very uninspiring nudes one time. But anyway, that's all I know about My Bloody Valentine.
I said the hunt. The only other thing I have been watching is last night I got my life when I saw Monica and Brandy perform together.
I didn't see it yet. I was working on my stupid pilot. And my friend Dennis texted me,
I watched the whole thing and they were just tip-a-tat sharing each other's songs. And, you know, they kind of, and then they start doing runs with the songs and complimenting each other. And they even had a moment where Monica was like, well, this song came out right around that time when I was that bitch that would kick doors down and slap bitches. And then Brandy chimed in like, yeah, I know, I was one of them bitches. And that shit, when she was like, I'm saved now, like, get off my motherfucking case. Like, it was lovely. Like, it really, really brought me so much joy. I forgot how many damn Monica and Brandy songs I loved. How I grew up, that was like 10th grade. I mean, 5th grade was Moesha. It was Brandy, Monica. Like, I listened to them obsessively.
Yeah.
And like, after this really trying ass weekend, like, first of all, started off so fucking horribly with that awful news about Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, rest my God.
Yeah, that shit. I'm still crying about it. It still hurts my feelings so much. And
so young,
I'm inspired too by it too. And then, you know, the weekend ended on a really high note for me because I was really happy for my brother. My brother, shout out to him. Like, he did one of his biggest projects. You know, he's done so many great things, but he just directed DaBaby's performance at the VMAs. He was the creative director. And he made a really powerful political statement in that performance. And
I feel like it was one of the only things in the show that actually spoke to the time that we're in. Yeah. People were weirdly like in denial.
It was so dystopian. The whole thing was, it was weird. It was just.
And it was like, so nobody's going to say, I was like, oh, so, you know, cause like Kiki started it off. She did a great job, I thought, but she started it off being like, in this time, Black Lives Matter, like da 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 da. And like, I was expecting that to be echoed in other people, like accepting their awards and saying something about the times, and this nothing was being, I was just like, are we on some like denial shit right now?
And the nerve of them putting, our producer Alex brought up that they put Chloe and Halle at the pre-show and their performance was fucking beautiful. It was so good. Like, they should have been up in the main show too. Like, there was some missteps. I mean, it's the fucking VMAs.
I'm sorry, Rain On Me is not that song. It just isn't. Not for me. And like, first of all, Savage by Meg had such a cultural moment. I don't understand why that lost to Rain On Me, which was a thing for 2 minutes for the gays only. Like,
yeah. This song does nothing for me. No. I don't know what else to say. The performance was very like, okay. I'm not even hating on Gaga. Like, you know, a lot of people, some people are very perturbed by her. Some people love her. I think she's actually super talented. I'm not up crazy about a lot of the music she does. Like, I think if she did like R&B and shit, like, she would kill it. She would fucking kill it. But no, she does these weird, she tries to appease people. I feel like, and it's, I don't feel like her personality is 100% genuine. She wasn't.
No, she's definitely like a theater kid, you know, but I don't mind inauthentic, like, I don't mind when people are play characters or, you know, are not quote unquote real. Like, I don't care. Like, everyone's doing their own thing. But like you said, it's just not particularly inspiring to me. Although I did find, like, she had, during that performance, she had that mask with the robot voice thing on it. I thought that was pretty dope.
I think it's cute. I seen him. And she has some great fashion moments. The silver look with the feathered thing. I just seen that somewhere. I forget who was wearing that. It's like Valentino or something. But I was talking to my brother about this and people who perpetrate, you know, and try to come up with this character. For some people, it works. For some people, it's necessary. For some people, it, you know, take it or leave it, like you said. And with her, yeah, I've never gotten into this whole Gaga and her monsters thing, but I'm like, but the bitch can sing and the bitch can play music. I recognize that, you know, but I don't need all the other shit.
I know. I live in like constant fear of being canceled because I don't like Lady Gaga. I don't dislike her. It's just not my thing. Like, I just didn't, it didn't hit me at the time when it was supposed to. But people really be hating on you if you don't like stand for that woman. And I'm just like,
that bullshit. Nah, I don't know about that life. Most people I know don't care for her.
I guess it's just when I was on the internet more and like on Twitter and stuff like that, I just like see the, and also because I was on a show, I was on Food for Thought, which is all gays. And so we got a lot of gay opinions. And I remember one episode where I was like, yeah, but that's like some Lady Gaga shit. I don't like that shit. And some like, and all these gays came for me. And I was like,
yeah,
that's
I don't your know queen. Gays. The gays that's your know, queen. Be like, what the fuck, Dad? We don't fuck with her.
And say, if that's your queen, then worship at that altar. That's just not mine. That's not my ministry. I don't care about that.
My gays love Mariah. They love this Mimi. And that I love me some Mariah. I love me some. Yeah, that's my scene. Art, you know, I stay that way. But, and I feel like Gaga's inspired by all that shit, you know? Of course she is. How couldn't you be?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Somebody made some rude comment about her. She put on her COVID-15. I'm like, first of all, I was not looking at her body. Like, I mean, not in that way. And I wasn't looking at it negatively.
Oh, that's shitty.
I thought she looked fine. I mean, I thought she looked really good. I thought she looked super healthy. And like, and this, like the rudeness of even having to say that bullshit. But I didn't appreciate that.
Drea, what do we talk about today?
Today we're getting into, we're just, I mean, Lovecraft Country, this last episode was so good. It was insanely good that we're just going to talk about that as our main discussion. And then for our Scream Queen of the Week, we're going to get into Miss Halle Berry in Gothica.
And these are both, you know, some ghost stories. So tie-ins. I know you were thinking about that. I know you were thinking about that, Dre. I know you were thinking about
that. Oh, yeah, yeah. Shusha, you in my head. In my head.
So yeah, this week, Lovecraft Country, it was, what was it? Holy Ghost, that was the name. This week, Letty buys a haunted house and we learn a lesson from a baby-headed man ghost on Unity. the pretext or whatever, or like the thing is, like the first like frame we get what the plot of the episode, I was gonna say movie because it felt like very cinematic.
It was like a movie. Every episode's like a movie, yeah.
But it said so we get the plot up front, which is in the summer of 1955, a group of Negro men and women move into a house on the north side of Chicago. 10 days later, three people went missing inside the house, never to be seen again. And that scared me because I was like, I do not want to see any of these people die.
No,
but that's not really the way it goes down.
No. Yeah, we enter this 1955. That's also the year both my parents were born. You know, and there's so much going on around that time. That's the same year that Emmett Till was killed. You know, there's just a lot of you know, powerful and heartbreaking things that have gone down. But through this episode, we get to know the trials and the tribulations of what it is to move into a white neighborhood. You know, they go as far as to move in on a Sunday when everybody's at church. You know, I've also heard of, you know, people moving in at nighttime to people, you know, and, you know, so they don't see the shit you got and who you are. And, but they had to go against this neighborhood and who called them the undesirables.
Oh my God.
And, you know, they terrorize them.
I mean, that's the thing that was like, okay, yeah, yes, there's like, this is a haunted house story. This is a ghost story. And for me, it was like probably the most like a scary movie that we've gotten from the show probably this far. But it also grounded itself in real horror. Yeah. You know, the horror of being a pioneer, you know, in a neighborhood, moving into an all-white neighborhood. The horror of like housing discrimination. The horror of like, the like how so many histories of surgery and gynecology, etc., exist because of doctors experimenting on black bodies, you know, and that's kind of like the ghost part of the ghost story. But it's like it echoes all of these real life horrors, you know.
Yes. In the beginning of the episode, we also see we're back at George's house with Tick, his daughter, and Hippolyta, and you know, they don't really explain what's going on. Things just don't seem, they seem a little too chill. Hippolyta's upset and she's tearing up a Dracula book that you can kind of draw to conclusion that that belongs to George. Mm-hmm. And then you find out that they told her the story that George was shot by a sheriff. And that's how they kind of cleared up his death.
But she knows that's not the full story.
Well, when we'll get to that because we're talking, you know, talking about a black woman's instinct. From the moment she walks into the kitchen, the way she handles herself, carries herself, watches how Tick puts down a coffee cup mug, and she gets really disturbed by it because it reminded her of her husband, and or you know, just so many things are going on, and something just isn't quite right. You know?
It's tense.
Yeah, And then you get back over to Journey and her, and she convinces her sister to buy this haunted house, or a house that looks haunted as fuck. And they again, it's like as if that whatever just happened in episode two never happened. You know, it's like they're not even addressing it. And
like, Letty full on died, you know, mm-hmm. and she's like, we get that scene of her in church. Everyone is kind of joyous and dancing, and she's just like bereft. Like she just looks like in grief, in mourning. And it's like, oh, it gave me, you know, there's that one character in The House on Haunted Hill, or Haunting of Hill House, after she touches her dead sister and like the dead kind of washes into her. And you realize that she's just like, she's in this void. You know, and like Letty's kind of in this void where she just wants to feel something.
Yeah. And then come back to Ramona. She gets into what she talked. She died the last episode. She was shot and killed. And then she came back to life. And I felt that moment when she came back to life and what that must feel like, you know, because I've that's been that. I'm trying to think of what movies have used that kind of an outlet where they try to explain, like, I guess, what's that movie with Kiefer Sutherland back in the day where the people that killed that like to come back to life? They're like, they made a remake of it.
Flatliners.
Flatliners.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, in limbo. She's like in limbo right now. And she's been violated. And so when I start realizing, I'm like, oh, the only reason they're going about things in this show this way right now, and they haven't run out of this house like when the elevator almost cuts her head off, is because they're under some kind of spell still. That's mm-hmm. It's clear. They're still under some kind of fog. And I watched the episode twice. So the first time I watched it with my dad, and he said the same shit my mom said. He was like, well, you know, these are black people, so if unless they under a spell, like this episode would be over already. Like, you just leave the fucking house. And I'm like, yeah, basically. And I'm like, that's the only reason they could be up in there. Also, me and my dad both covered each other's eyes when Tick and Journey got it on. Oh, that booty though. That ass though.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I got a little peek, but me and my dad were like, oh no, you can't watch that.
You didn't take a bite out of that, man. It was juicy.
Oh my
juicy.
God.
Juicy booty.
Asshole. And then he left her like that, his little weirdness. Get out of here with your little PTSD, bitch. That is rude as fuck.
Was it saying that that was Letty's first time?
I didn't pick up on that, but that ain't Letty's first time.
I don't know Letty like that.
I don't think that's Letty's first time. Just trying to, based on the strength that her character emotes, and I mean, in this episode, really, my mother and I, we both times I watched it, her scene at the end where she brings back all the slaves or the people that were murdered in that house. And that what she evokes, that power in her voice, my God, it erupted something in me. It is, if she doesn't get nominated and win something for that, like, mm-hmm. that this is like the role of a lifetime for her. I can't say it enough. She is doing so beautiful. Like, it really, like, I'm about to get into tears right now just thinking about what she expressed in that moment and kicking that. You get out of my motherfucking house. You get mm-hmm. out of my motherfucking house.
I like that we got a Letty episode so much. It also, like, because that other story was, like, kind of self-contained and this story was kind of self-contained, that's how I'm seeing the connection to A Book of Short Stories. But there is this C-plot that's running through with Christina Braithwaite and Tick's lineage and what that will allow them to unlock. Mm. And I'm like tracking that. I'm seeing where that goes. But as a Letty centric episode, and then remembering that she just died and how she's trying to feel something. So like initially that's like with her sister, right? She's like, I bought this house and I want you to live in with me. And you know, we're gonna really bond as like sisters, you know? And that kind of doesn't work out because we learn that, first, we think, anyway, that it's because she got an inheritance from a mother and did not share it with her brother or sister. And so they're reasonably pissed, right? Mm-hmm. Later on, we learn that, like, it was maybe Christina that set up the payment for her, but we'll get into that later.
Put some glamour on her or something.
Yeah. So that's a part of it. Like, and then her thing with Tick too, like, she just wants to feel something, but like that doesn't do it either. Mm-mm. And the beautiful moment that you're pointing out at the end, or okay, and then like when she finally gets to express her anger, she grabs that bat and takes it to all those motherfucking cars. I felt catharsis, yes. But even then, it didn't fix the malady. It didn't fix the thing
then,
that.
And then that Sandra Bland moment where they put her in the back of that paddy wagon and roughed her up like that, mm-hmm. like that. They changed things around for that to in the book. I've discovered I've decided I don't want to get ahead. Like, I want to see how things change, but I'm really impressed how they switch things around in this book. Like, it was written by a white man, but he was really thoughtful with how he wrote about people. And the way that Black people have taken this character, Misha Green has taken these characters, and she's gender swapped so many roles and characters and lines, but it all works out perfectly. Like that line at the beginning where right at the beginning opening scene where Tick is talking to that woman and they have to walk together on the bus, back from the bus. And he's talking to her about the sci-fi book he's reading. But it's about a guy that supported the Confederacy. That line was actually a Montrose line. And Montrose is the one that actually pointed out, he went out of his way to find an H.P. Lovecraft book and share it with Tick to show Tick, you know, and he showed him that poem on the creation of niggers. And he was like, this is who you support, just so you know. And, but it's very interesting how they did all that. What other scenes really stuck out to me?
Do you think we're getting a Hippolyta episode? Because she goes into that room and she...
So dope. Oh, and Hippolyta, my mother said this. Okay, so here's a cool little connection. Hippolyta was in a movie called Men of Honor. Men of Honor is about the first Black master diver in the history of the Navy. My dad's the fourth. And that my dad was a consultant on that film.
Oh.
And we like went to like all the premieres and all that shit for that. But yeah, that's a, she plays Carl Brashear's, my dad's mentor. She plays his wife in that film. So that was kind of an interesting connection.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like her so much. I like that actress a lot. And I like this character because, you know, she's really ambitious. We already know that she's a really good writer because she's been writing for this like Green Book like thing that George was working on, and also like she's an amateur astronomer, and so she walks into a room with this like sort of planetary contraption.
What happened there? I want to know about that.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that so we get an episode where with her when we can just like see her her go wild on something.
I want to see her and her daughter get an episode because those two are both really incredible to me.
What did you make of the Ouija board scene? Speaking of her daughter,
I don't know who that was. Was that George? George is dead. So why would George be saying George is dead? But
I know.
But
it was curious to me. Because I didn't really get it. All I really got was like, yes, there are spirits in this house, but I wasn't sure what it was doing.
I mean, I don't know, but I do feel that George is coming back. Like, I'm gonna get him back.
There was so much Courtney B. Vance promotion in the beginning. I was like, they can't take him out. Second episode, we don't see him ever again.
He's gonna play some kind of major role in this. And I mean, why can't they bring the brother back? Why? They better. It's fucking sci-fi. Just bring him back. It's not real. Just do it. Also, yeah, you brought it up, but the only ridiculous thing that I could not wrap my head around was that baby on that basketball player baby head. I'm like, what? Because
like there was some really scary shit, and there was some really gross shit, like that dude who got his head taken off by the elevator, and it's just pumping out of the vein in his neck. But like that was a moment where I was like, I'm sorry, this is too ridiculous.
Who okayed that? Because that is ridiculous.
A little bit taking me out of the moment right now.
I loved it because it's so fucking just ridiculous. I don't know what to say about that shit. I did like when they start to transform back into their former selves. I thought that was really cool.
Finally, Letty gets a moment where she gets to feel something and heal.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's ultimately like her arc over the episode, which is like searching around all of these extra like things outside of herself that she thinks will take care of her problem, of her existential grief of having died. Because bitch, I bet that shit is scary as fuck. Yeah. And so there's a trauma associated with that. And it was like by helping to heal these people in this house and to exorcise the demon of his last name was Epstein, Hiram Epstein, that initiated a healing process inside of herself too.
I completely agree. Mm. I absolutely do. The other opening, that one scene where, right before all the shit starts going on, like they break their furnace and she wakes up in her room that morning. I really liked when that sheet's getting pulled off and then in the woman's face and then her half of her mouth is like pulled.
Ooh, that was disgusting. But the thing is like, I love that shit too. And like, it's not, I mean, it's kind of conventional in the sense that like, I mean, ghost stories, there are going to be a certain number of things that all of these kind of scary movies like have in common. And having the opportunity now to write my own horror thing, it's just been really fun to be able to play around with stuff like that, you know? And like I'm just going to bring it because the image that sticks out the most in my mind. So like as Letty and Tick and this woman who, you know, murders a goat on their front on the front porch, which like if I was a neighbor, I'd be a little bit concerned about that too, not gonna lie.
So I saw that and I was like, did that bitch do it on the front porch?
I know, just like right there for all them white neighbors to be like, no, I mean, now these people are doing animal sacrifices, so we definitely have to get them out of this neighborhood. Like, so she gives them like in order to exorcise these ghosts, they have to do a protection spell or whatever, which is like the goat blood. And she gives them a cross on each one of their foreheads so they can go in. So as they go into the basement, which had been Letty's dark room. And so she's been taking all these pictures and putting together all of this information that like who this ghost is, what he's been doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they go down to exorcise the demons or the ghosts or whatever. And then these three white men with bats come in, you know, looking to kill.
Looking to start a ruckus.
And we learned that like, from the top of the episode that was like three people go missing, it's actually these three white men. So I was very relieved when it turned out to be three white
Once
men.
Once I figured that out, I was like, okay.
Yeah,
They've set it up in a way I was like, no, I don't want to see. No, I don't want that.
I don't want more Black Death. That's not what I want. But they gave us White Death and that was fine. So.
And speaking of, what's her first name? What, Braithwaite?
Christina. That was a very interesting scene.
That bitch. Like, you can't go shooting white women. Duh. I'm
like, ooh. Because she buys this realty place or whatever, and Tit goes in there, and he's like, as he's talking to her, he starts to close the blinds. And I'm just like, Tit, don't fuck a white woman. Like, I was just like, don't. Like, I thought that...
Fuck her?
I thought that that might be where it's going.
No!
I didn't know.
What on earth would possess you? You just wanted to see that booty.
You know?
I knew he was going in there to hurt her. I knew it. We ain't fucking it.
So he comes in, closed all these blinds. They're having some blithe discussion about the nature of Letitia's inheritance. And then he's like, I want you to stay the fuck away from my family. Aims a gun at her. And she just like, listen, bitch, I have all these spells. Like most men, if they're lucky in this Adam cult, they can do maybe one and it's imperfect, but I've been doing my work and I have all these spells. So don't fuck with me. And then as she's doing this, he can't move. So he still has his like-
Can't pull the trigger. Yeah.
He can't pull the trigger, but he still got the gun out. And then she starts to undo all of the blinds. And I was like, oh God.
Uh-huh. And rub his arm and push his arm down. And oh, that conniving little bitch. She's really good at her character.
She's really good. And also, them outfits are nice, too.
Everybody looks
Everybody is so fucking stylish. It's, like, not even fair.
Michael K. Williams, when he gets woken up drunk, when Tick throws the water in his face and he leaves the room, he looks like shit when he wakes up and he walks back in the room and he has his mustard shirt on. He looks so good. I was like, what the fuck? Up like that quick.
So where do you think we're going with Tick and his like birthright? Is he going to be making some spells? Is that where we're going? Because the thing is, the reason why Christina, if I'm getting this correctly, because I saw it twice too, and I kind of put it together more the second time around. The reason Christina facilitated Letty buying that house was because Hiram Epstein, who was the guy who was doing all of the experiments, was a disciple of one of the sons of Adam, okay, who had stolen pages out of the Book of Names in order to try to recreate some of those spells. So I'm guessing that somewhere in that house are these stolen pages, and that's what Christina's looking for.
Okay, okay. Yeah, by the end of it, I was trying to pick, I couldn't follow that last bit that she kept saying. I just couldn't follow it because I was just following other things, but yeah, I mean, just upon, if I could just guess where I think he's headed, like, who do I think is going to be the first to tap into something? I mean, it's either going to be him or it's going to be Journey's character. It's either going to be him or Letty. Mm-hmm. But then again, maybe Michael's already been onto something, because he came and went.
Either way.
And I just can't wrap my head around what that looks like, them getting their inheritance back. I guess they just rule everything. They just cash runs everything around me, cream, get the money, all of the bills.
But you know, more money, more problems. So
but
I don't know.
I'm thinking they're saying, like, if I rule the world, I free all my souls, black diamonds and pearls.
If I ruled the world, we walk right into the sun hand in hand. We walk right into the sun. I am wondering about, because the teasers have been showing us a Ruby episode, which I'm really looking forward to. And the dynamic between Ruby and Letty is palpable. It's like uncomfortable. And you know they really want to love each other, but sometimes family shit. Sometimes, like,
I know all about it.
Like, family dynamics.
Says, I thought you was just fucked up. It turns out you're just a fuck up. Oh no, I thought you were just a fuck up. It turns out you're just fucked up. I was like, ooh.
Ruby came with the library with the glasses in the library card because she was getting ready to read.
It was a lot, and I felt it. It was, like you said, palpable. They're gonna get together. Ruby's gonna unlock something too. Well, Ruby's about to have a really major moment. I can't wait for that.
Because they've been showing her on stage. You know, she has aspirations of being a singer. And so we do get to see, I mean, we got a teaser of her like being actually on stage. So it's like one of those things, I bet, of like wish fulfillment and like what you have to give up and all that kind of stuff. But I'm really looking forward to that. And also her voice is gorgeous and I love that actress. So
she's fantastic. So.
Yeah.
So high. So next week, we'll be following this shit up, and we have no idea what. I didn't watch the preview because I just don't want to. I didn't want to yet. Did you watch it? Okay.
Yeah. I want to be surprised. I mean, this is the first time. Well, I mean, I'm not anti-spoiler by any. I'm not the way that you are. Because if I start to open my mouth about something you haven't seen yet, No. But I feel that way about this show. And I haven't felt that way in a long time. I didn't feel that way necessarily about Watchmen, about Outsider, you know, about Insecure or I May Destroy You. I always watch the previews because got me excited, you know, got me salivating a little bit for the next episode. But I just want to walk knowing that like a lot of these are probably going to be like Monster of the Week type episodes because it's based on a book of short stories. I don't want to know anything. I want to go into it completely without expectation.
Yeah, I agree. So I we just want to give props one more time to Journey and to Tick or Jonathan Majors' booty, because that's beautiful. Motherfucker apple.
I'm getting all these like plant stands, you know, and you could definitely put a plant on that ass. You could stand a plant on that ass. Like,
ooh, Lord have mercy. It was like almost offensive how beautiful it was. I was like, That is a lot, sir.
Two, because episode two and episode three, we get a little bit of butt. So if we could just have him turn around a little bit, maybe
and not be a snake next time, please. I don't.
Oh Lord,
that was horrible.
I don't need that in my life. I don't need that in my dreams. I don't need that in my spirit.
All right, though. But as our main discussion, we just want to say, yeah, get into Lovecraft Country. It's the shit. Okay. So. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so excited to have an excuse to talk about this woman. She just means the whole world to so many Black girls around the world. Miss Holly Berry in Gothica. There are reasons why I avoided this movie. And I had heard things alluding to her not having such a great experience on the film. So I didn't know if that's something I wanted to dredge up. But you know what? I fucking had a great experience seeing this thing. And every time I watch it, I legit think this is a really well-made film. And I thought she was like an Alfred Hitchcockian kind of girl. Like, she is so classic in it. But it stars Holly Berry. She plays Dr. Miranda Gray, a psychiatrist in a women's mental hospital, who wakes up one day to find herself on the other side of the bars, accused of having murdered her husband. Charles S. Dutton from Rock. If y'all remember motherfucking Rock. And if you remember, he was also in Nick of Time with Johnny Depp and Christopher Walken. He's really good in that. And also stars Penelope Cruz.
Who I didn't know. I mean, I hadn't seen Gothica. Mm. And her opening in this movie was really good. She sold the shit out of that.
She was just the whole film.
Perfect.
It is. She's creepy as fuck. I don't know why she didn't get more pops with this character. She was fantastic. This is the big part of the reason I like her so much. I love her. Also stars, as we said, Charles S. Dutton, Robert Downey Jr., and John Carroll Lynch, who we just talked about in American Horror Story, 1984, and Zodiac, and yada yada.
And from being tall.
Just being a big-ass motherfucker. I think, based on where this film goes, okay, I'm going to get into why I couldn't talk about this film. And I had heard a story around the time that John Wick 3 came out. And I'd heard this before, way like years and years ago. And I wasn't sure about it. But it was Anjelica Huston and Holly Berry were on James Corden promoting John Wick 3. And they did this game called Spill Your Guts or Fill Your Guts. And they have a table full of just like the nastiest shit you could think of to eat or take or divulge some really like juicy details.
Oh, like, love it.
Saliva in like a martini glass with like beetles and like fucking cow tongues and turkey balls and bull penis. And Anjelica Huston chose to eat the bull penis instead of talk about her and Jack Nicholson. And then Halle Berry was asked, who are the people you would never work with? She says, well, I have two people on that list. And she said, she wouldn't say who, but she says he's super duper famous and not that tall. And I was like, who? Who's super duper famous? And I'm like, oh, Iron Man. And I'm like, all the Avengers films. And he's not that tall. Anyway, very little sleuthing, but I found the story. He broke her fucking arm and basically blamed her and didn't even apologize for it, really. He did the stunt wrong, snapped her arm.
Oh my God.
He had to recover for weeks and he never formally apologized. And the only things he said about it were like, I cleaned up my side of the yard. I don't know what happened over there. You know
what I like hate most about the Avengers movies is this aggressive rebranding of Robert Downey Jr. Because he's famously a piece of shit.
I mean, he's that dude that broke into like some family's house and woke up in some kid's bed all strung out or some shit. Listen, I don't want to judge the man based on, him being in he had some horrible days, some bad issues with addiction. And I prayed for him back then. I did. I love me some Robert. I think it's a true story that his father gave him like acid when he was like 4 or 5 years old. Like, that's a true story. Damn. And, he had a lot of odds set against him. That said, it doesn't excuse that behavior and the fact that he never made proper amends for it. And it's not like, how hard is that?
You could actually just do it right now in 2 seconds. It was a really difficult period of my life. And like, I didn't really know what was going on. I'm really sorry I did that to that woman. Instead, apologies are actually so easy to do. And they do so much work in terms of healing and setting things right. And it's just a matter of 3 or 4 words, to just set things on a good course. Right. I did not know about this movie. It was giving me, having seen Lovecraft Country a couple of times and then watching Gothica, I was getting a little bit of Lovecraft country vibes. But why was the ghost beating the shit out of her? That's what I don't understand.
She was like, dumb bitch, don't you know what your husband's up to?
Well, she could have just been like, hey, bitch, go to this basement. There's a girl down there. And instead of being like flipping her around her cell, throwing her against the wall, throwing her against the thickest shelf.
It's a mess.
Like slashing the shit out of her arm. I'm just like, bitch, you could give her some images. Like, why does this have to be? I don't get why this ghost is treating Halle Berry like shit. On the same side. Like,
the only excuse for it, the reasoning behind it is so she invokes the rage that she felt and that the violence that was inflicted on her. She wants to make sure that Halle understands. They really went for it though. I really liked the first meeting of her and Halle on the road, and she goes to help her and she touches her face and those flames on her face. Like that, all those effects were so cool. They didn't go overboard with that shit. The use of, and then Penelope Cruz talks about it. Like he makes me burn on the inside. Have you ever been made to burn on the inside or whatever? It's just like, and then you see the tattoo on John Carroll Lynch's chest,
I don't know if it's because he's John Carroll Lynch, but he's never not creepy to me. So even in the very beginning when he like threw her off and then like he was like interrogating her, or later when he comes back to the cell, I was always like, don't be in the same room with that man.
Mm-hmm. Thumbs off.
Yeah.
Thumbs off.
But we kind of get the idea that maybe, you know, Halle Berry has potentially unlocked some kind of like ability inside of herself to be a medium, because at first she thought it was like this one experience, but at the end she sees somebody else, like a missing boy. So like I was thinking, like, because you had mentioned in the doc like Gothica 2, like I thought that we were getting set up for potentially a sequel.
They totally wanted to go in that direction, but because of now confirmed, you know, situations, we know why we probably will never ever get one. And I mean, they could replace Robert. They could easily do that.
I mean, Halle Berry looks the exact motherfucking same, so.
Yeah, so just go ahead and do it. Like, let me see. Oh, also I wanted to mention little things. The director, Mathieu Kassovitz, he directed La Haine. I don't know if anybody's ever seen, somebody who watches this has seen La Haine, but it stars Vincent Cassel. It's about the ghettos in Paris, and it's a lot. And it's based on a line that's about like hatred creates hatred. And anyway, it's a really heavy, amazing film. You should watch it sometime.
Okay, okay.
Heavily recommend that.
How did you feel about later on when, after Halle escapes his mental institution? First of all, I'm just like, watch where you're going. You already almost hit this girl in the middle of the street at the beginning of this film, and that's what's ticked off this whole thing. But she's all of a sudden, the ghost has its foot on the gas. I don't know, don't got no brake in this car. Something's happening. She almost hits like a truck, and she's just, and then she's like, ah, and then turns back and like hits all this other shit. I was like, man, you need to get your license taken away, first of all. Second of all, then she gets back to the house and she's like reimagining or reenacting all of the night of that she murdered Charles S. Dutton, which she did, but it was because that ghost had got inside of her and hijacked her body. How did you feel about that axe scene?
Oh, it was dope. I always love that axe scene when you see his arm that get chopped in half almost. It's really good. And, you know, he creeped me out from day one because I, watching it now, back then I was like, oh yeah, okay, he's her husband. Doesn't make any sense today. And I was like, oh wait, I forgot the time I watched it recently. I was like, wait, and when they started to kiss, I'm like, wait, that's her dad, right? I was like, oh no.
I was also not getting romantic vibes at all. I was like, he calls himself God. God.
You know, right when he did that, I'm like, and then
there's something off about this man. Yeah, I was like, this is some incel shit, because like there is no way. I'm sorry, I don't care how smart you are. You know what? Let me just not even go there. I'm not even gonna go there. We all know what I'm about to say. But as he was getting ready, I had the same vibe where I was like, wait a minute, I was not reading husband. No. I was reading authority figure.
He has her, she is a What she's his trophy. She's a trophy wife. Like she is a symbol to distract the world from the monster that he is. Mm-hmm. And when John Carroll Lynch starts to talk about like, well, we were fine, you know, like he confesses that Holly's husband, he killed his first person when he was 15 years old. And he goes, and I helped him bury him because that's what best friends do. And then you came into the picture. It's like, what the fuck?
You know, when she was talking about like, this man is largely probably very unclear about his own sexuality. And I was like, man, you just wanted Charles S. Dutton dick. And that's why you're trying to take it out on Miss Halle Berry. But so it turns out that Charles S. Dutton and John Carroll Lynch have been killing women for a long time and filming it and drugging them. And it was just like,
got a whole sex dungeon and it's fucked up. It's still fucked up to watch this film. I'm like, yeah. And I just really appreciate all the elements that they involved in this. It's supernatural. It's dealing with things that really are happening, you know, violence against women and this kind of shit exists. And it's,
well, yeah, it kind of reminded me of The Cell in the sense that it was like something like creepy, but also like rooted in some almost like a what do you call it? True crime.
Yeah, super masochistic, and you know, just really, it's a lot.
But I really like what you said about Halle Berry's character as like a kind of smokescreen for Charles S. Dutton. Like her in his life is like, he could never be a bad man. Like he's a family man or he's like a husband, you know, she is the deflection.
Mm-hmm. She's like this perfect thing, you know, and everybody's like, oh, Dr., you know, Miranda Gray, and you know, like what a great match.
But
you know?
What is she getting out of this? That's what I'm wondering. Does he sling it? Like, I've got to know. I mean,
he must be pecking. Listen, I can't believe I just talked about Charles S. Dutton like that. He's like my uncle or some shit. but I grew up watching him. He had like this really dope show back on like back in the day on BET called Rock, and it was like one of those family shows you sat down to watch.
And then every now and then they would do like Rock that. Live, yeah. Mm-hmm. Every now and then they do like a live episode.
Yeah. I appreciate him. And so that's why I kind of get what they were going for with that choice of character. He is a very prominent and powerful man. And this, his acting strength is very reminiscent of like, he's somewhere between like a Paul Robeson and a Lawrence Fishburne. And, you know, I just really, I thought it was pretty dope that he even played a character like this, because it's just so far from anything he's ever done. He's usually plays more regal, in your face, but regal characters to some descent.
And like very emotionally grounded, like virtuous figures.
Yeah.
So I like the villain turn here. Levels.
Levels. That's the phrase of the evening. It's levels.
It's levels to this shit.
Let me see. What else stuck out to me? I mean, beyond the tea that I reconfirmed, I ain't to discover that shit, but really. Oh, I did want to say that a hot take, but I'm glad Iron Man died in Avengers. So my ass.
And you prayed on him. You prayed on him back in the day, and now he can eat your ass. Okay.
I said it.
Halle Berry.
I still watch Weird Science.
Yeah. I mean, I look up his new
picture. I'll still watch Pickup Artist.
I don't know.
I'll still watch, give me one more Robert Downey Jr. film that I'll watch.
Was he in that movie with Janine Garofalo and the dude? And it's like, never mind. I can't even think of that.
Were you going to say Reality Bites or something?
That's what I was going to say. No. Okay.
That's Ethan Hawke and some other people. And Winona.
Winona. Anyway, Halle Berry giving us Girl Interrupted energy in Gothica.
Get off of me, bitch! I love her screams, by the way. Like, I really, she is like fantastic scream queen.
She's also a good crier.
Yeah, I mean, well, make me feel good.
Oh, that was awkward. Oh, that was awkward as fuck. I'm not trying to see Billy Bob like that. I'm sorry.
That shit was hot. I don't give a fuck what you talk about.
I didn't like it.
Oh, I loved it.
I didn't like it.
Make me feel good.
Gross. let's move on, shall we?
Bitch, bye.
What up, queens? Don't forget, we got a Google Voice number, and we want to hear from you. What's the scariest you've ever been in a movie theater? What happened? What was the movie? Paint us a picture. We'd like to know. You can hit us up at 619-289-9052. Record us a little message. Say your name or don't. You can just tell us a story, and you could be featured on a future episode of Scream Queen.
Hi, I am calling to talk about Steven Spielberg's 1982 film, E.T., which I don't think people really know or completely understand is actually a scary movie. I would argue one of the scariest movies ever made, and I knew this when I saw the movie for the first time in 1999 at a dollar movie night at my local theater. I was around 7, and my parents took me and my sister and my cousins to see this movie. And the second I saw the demon that is E.T., I was terrified. I was so scared. I wanted to leave the theater, could not leave the theater, and I did not talk to my parents the rest of the evening because I thought that it was their fault that they had exposed me to this horrific film. Again, don't understand why people do not understand why this is a scary movie. And that night, I was so scared from the movie residually that I ended up having a night terror about it, in which E.T. murdered Elliot and everyone else in the movie at the very end. And somehow that nightmare has become my actual memory of the movie itself. Like, I cannot pinpoint exactly what it was that scared me about the movie itself, except for just, like, E.T.'s general aesthetic and, like, vibe. But I had such a scary nightmare afterwards that has kind of transposed itself over my experience of the movie. And I have refused to rewatch it ever since. So I will not be proven wrong. And to me, that's how it ends. It ends with E.T. just doing a mass murder. And that's just something I have come to accept, and I will not hear otherwise. So that's my story. Thanks so much. I love you. Bye.
Hi, this is Willie, and the most scared I've been in a movie theater was in the summer of 2007. I was home from college, and a couple high school friends and I thought it would be a good idea to take some gravity bong hits and go see a little film called No Country for Old Men. I remember very little about that movie. I know I didn't understand it, and I know that we sat close to the front, and so everything was eerily foreshortened, like a sort of huge, skewed Anton Chigurh killing people with a pneumatic cattle thing. So that was probably the most frightened I've been, on an existential and a sort of more kind of mundane, just sort of weed anxiety level. That was probably it.
Catch us next week, same time, same place. Not always sure what we're covering just yet, but we'll let you know on our social media, on our Instagram, what have you.
Scream Queen is produced by Alexander De Palma and Domino Sound,
with theme music by Doc Allison.
I'm Drea Watt Washington, and you can find me on the gram at Hey Girl Hey. That's HEYGRLHEY.
And I'm Tommy Tubes Pico. Tommy, I miss sucking dick Pico. Tommy, I still don't want anybody else in my bed Pico, even though I miss people Pico. You can find me on Instagram at HeyTubes, HeyTeBS. I am never ever going on Twitter ever again.
Good for you. Good yes, for you.
Yes.
You can find us on Instagram at Scream Queen Podcast.
And online at ScreamQueenPodcast.com.
Send us some love notes at ScreamQueen@gmail.com. That's ScreemQueen@gmail.com.
In the scary movie of your life.
You better. Scream
Queen. Ew, no, no, no. She's coming for you.
Love you, Tommy. I love you, Tommy.
Leaving Zoom meeting.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.